New findings in behavioral science are giving us a better understanding of how our brains work, why we make the choices we do, and what it takes for us to be at our best. But it's been challenging to see how to apply these insights in the real world. In the new book, How to Have a Good Day, economist and former McKinsey partner Caroline Webb shows us how to use recent discoveries from behavioral economics, psychology, and neuroscience to transform our approach to everyday working life. Again, the name of the book is How to Have a Good Day, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Caroline Webb to the roundtable this morning. Caroline, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Very nice to have you on the program. What got you thinking in this way of translating these big scientific ideas into something that comes down to that basic premise of how we can have a good day?
Well, over the last 20 years or so, I've been working with people, often in professional context, sometimes beyond it, to help them be at their best. And I just found over the years that there was so much that was going on in behavioral science, and by which I mean neuroscience, psychology, and economics, which has so much to say to us about how we think and feel and behave and why we make the choices we do. And very little of it is actually trickling through to the workplace. These interesting pieces of research have a lot to say about how we might manage our time and think about our priorities and interactions and calendars and so forth, and how we might be at our best if we did that in a particular way. But it's surprising to me how little of it is making the leap from the labs into the workplace. So it became really the focus of my work. So I would be working with companies sometimes individuals, to help them shift their behavior, their cultures in a more positive direction. And the science was so helpful in illuminating exactly which small changes were going to have the biggest impact.
Especially when we are talking about the behavioral, I understand the psychological aspect. At least I understand most of it. But when it comes to the economic aspect of it and how those behavioral economics play into it, I'm a little less clear. So how does that work into the equation?
Well, you know, to be honest, the boundaries between the people who are doing behavioral neuroscience, behavioral psychology, and behavioral economics is really blurry. So, I mean, you're right to question, you know, well, what exactly is behavioral economics? And in behavioral aspects of neuroscience and behavioral economics, people are looking at topics that psychologists have looked at for decades. And so they're just bringing sort of a new set of analytical tools to some of the same topics that psychologists have investigated for a long time. So neuroscientists bring the biological aspect in terms of being able to look at physically what's happening in the brain as we might be making choices to, you know, to be grumpy or not. And in economics, I think that really the heart of what economics is about is why we make the choices we do, why we weigh pros and cons and incentives in the way that we do. And so economists have tended to bring perhaps a slightly more mathematical, theoretical approach to those questions. I really draw freely from all three disciplines, though, because, you know, if you're sitting in a meeting and you're trying to think about how do I make sure that we make the right choice here, there's input that comes from all directions, all those sciences that's useful, not just behavioral economics, which is more traditionally what we think of in terms of choice architecture and so forth.
Obviously, you address in the book about ways to boost our job satisfaction as well as our performance at work.
Absolutely.
How much does that rely on what is going on at home? How do those two work in concert with one another?
It's an excellent question. I mean, I think that the boundary between work and the rest of life is often, I mean, just as blurry as the boundary between the different scientific disciplines. You know, we're one person. You know, we might show up differently in the workplace and at home, but in all settings, we're trying to get things done and we're trying to be happy while we do it. And so I feel that, you know, over the years, it's become very clear to me that if I'm coaching someone ostensibly on how to help them be better at work, it's very rare that we wouldn't talk about issues which are, you know, just about themselves as a human being and how they are when they're at their best. And so quite often, my clients tell me that they end up practicing the sorts of techniques that are in the book on their spouses and even on their children. I've had reports of people using the techniques from the relationship section with teenage daughters with great success, and even one of my clients talking about using them with his one-year-old son to help him with language acquisition. So I really, you know, have tried to home in on the things which are essentially true about us as human beings and that are relevant to us whenever we're trying to get things done. So I define work really broadly. You know, it's just as much work if you're looking for a job. That's your work. It's work if you're working in the home, if you're a student, or if you're retired. There are things that we all want to get done. So I hope that the book speaks to all of that.
The book is arranged around 7 practices: priorities, productivity, relationships, thinking, influence, resilience, and energy. I assume that list could have been longer.
Well, it came actually out of years and years of asking people 3 simple questions. I would be going into a company, perhaps help them be more focused or collaborative or action-oriented or whatever it was that they wanted to do. And I would ask people, what is a good day for you? And what is a bad day? And what would it take to have more good days? And over the years, I asked that question hundreds of times. And so these 7 themes were the things that emerged that came out of the answers to those questions. So I feel that they're fairly solid. And of course, I had to make choices about things not to put in the book. For example, I didn't talk about big career choices. I really did focus on what can we do in the situation that we're in to find the wiggle room, the scope to make things better, whatever your situation is right now. Even if you might be looking to change job, what can you do with what you have right now?
So in that question of how do you define or what is a good day, that seems to be a very philosophical, existential question, isn't it? I mean, you could take that very far.
Yeah, and that was why I was glad to have spoken to so many people in so many different settings, in cultures across the world. I really was looking for the sort of unambiguous stuff that really helps us look back on a day and say, was that a good one? And there's, oh my goodness, you also find that certain people will say, oh, you know, the key thing in this book, it's all about the priorities. And then other people will say, no, you know, nothing means anything unless you've got energy to keep going. And others will say, yeah, but it's all about relationships. So I think different people find that they, you know, are particularly drawn to different parts of the book. And that's partly why I wrote it, so that it could be read in any order, actually, so that whatever's on your mind most, you can pick up the book. There's even, within each of the 7 sections, there are these sort of small chapters that can be read really quickly, and they're focused on each on a specific topic. So there's a chapter which is on managing tensions, which you can zoom right to if you're having a difficult conversation coming up this afternoon.
Because I often think of just survival, you know, getting through. I mean, not that there's anything horrible going on at any given moment, but just that you've made it through another one and you're getting ready for the next one in the queue. And I guess that gets most to resilience, of making you appreciate what just happened so it can better prepare you for what's coming.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. And we all have setbacks. We all have annoyances from day to day. And, you know, what this book is not saying is everything is awesome. You know, there's definitely a genre of self-help out there, which is...
And it's not.
Right. No, this is not that book. It's a very optimistic book, because it's saying, wow, we've got so much more control than we think over things that feel quite fixed and quite random in our lives. But it's also acknowledging that, you know, you can't control everything. So, you know, things will happen that you will not want to have happen, in which case, you know, that's why part 6 is devoted entirely to resilience. How do you handle it when, you know, people screw up, when you screw up, when, you know, when you're surrounded by uncertainty, when you're trying to keep your cool in the middle of a really challenging conversation. So that all has to be part of the kit bag. And it's not just a question of saying, if I just say everything's amazing, then it will be. Part of a really good toolbox for having a good day is knowing what to do when it's heading in the opposite direction.
two little pearls of wisdom that my father shared with me throughout my upbringing. One was that it's important to make a bed every day, because if you don't, then you won't know when your lucky day is. The other was the fact that you have to, and it's important for you to have a bad day, because then you appreciate and know when you have a good day. So we should know and appreciate the bad days too, right?
Well, I think it's part of the richness of life, absolutely. And the trick is to work out how you can learn from those bad days and take something from them. And, you know, there are three big science themes that run all the way through the book. And one of them is about the fact that your brain behaves very differently when it's under threat versus when it's focused on the rewards that are going on around you. So when something goes wrong and your brain goes into defensive mode, you're not thinking as clearly. And that's often exactly the time when you need to be thinking really clearly. So one of the things that you can do to get yourself back into a more expansive and intelligent frame of mind is actually to think about what are the rewards in the situation. And one of the sweetest rewards for the average brain is learning something new. So what can I learn from this is a really, really great way to hit reset in the middle of something that's not going well.
The name of the book is How to Have a Good Day: Harness the Power of Behavioral Science to Transform Your Working Life. The book is published by Crown Business. Caroline Webb, thank you very much for spending time with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
It's a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book, How to Have a Good Day: Harness the Power of Behavioral Science to Transform Your Working Life, by Caroline Webb. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.